Eddie, the senior year. Chapter 2. Indoor track tryouts. Now that Christmas break is over, it's back to school for Eddie. Kathy still has another week off before school starts, which is really not a week off. Kathy, along with Paula and Barbara, will be at the first day of indoor track tryouts at the high school. They will be returning to their roles as Mr. Fraser's team assistants, just as they were when Eddie and Mark were freshmen. This year they are interns, earning both class credit and a salary to help out with the team. There is no debate this year whether women are allowed on the men's sports teams. Women are allowed to participate on the men's teams as long as there's not a corresponding woman's team and the sport is not a contact sport. Mr. Zunday, the school's athletic director, has made this quite clear. After a long and heated debate over the previous 2 years, Mr. Crum, the principal, has finally relented and is no longer challenging the issue. Mr. Crum has moved on to other methods of disrupting the school's athletic programs. One of the ways Mr. Crum disrupts the athletic programs is to carefully time his disciplinary action to coincide with tryouts, meets, and divisional competitions. The issue at the end of last semester between Braden and his two adversaries, Chucky and Goldstein, is no different. On the first day back from Christmas break, during second period, the announcement is made over the loudspeaker, will Axel Braden, Edward Boganskaya, Mark Svoboda, Gary Mitchell, Eric Johnson, Robert Bradshaw, Charles Black, and Andrew Goldstein please report to room 103. In the gym, Mr. Fraser asks Mr. Zunday, "Do you know what this is all about?" Mr. Zunday replies, "I suspect it's about the fight between Braden and those two clowns at the end of last semester. I am going to see what Crum is up to." Mr. Fraser replies, "Track tryouts begin tomorrow. We can't afford to have those guys getting suspended." Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Fraser, "Crum's timing certainly is impeccable." Mr. Fraser replies, "I can't argue with that." Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser arrive at room 103, seeing Braden and the tribe comfortably seated in the choice seats near the window. Sitting far away, at the other side of the room, is Chucky and Goldstein, who dare not infringe upon the tribe's territory. Not seeing that Mr. Crum has arrived yet, Mr. Zunday asks, "Okay. Who here kept a library book checked out over Christmas break?" Braden replies, "It couldn't have been those two asses on the other side of the room. Their flimsy asses can't read." Goldstein yells back to Braden, "Hey. Shut your ass." Braden laughs and replies, "What's your fat ass gonna do about it, anyway?" Goldstein yells back, "I'm gonna kick your ass." "Yeah, man. You just wait." "Yeah, yeah." Braden laughs and replies, "I'll just sick my three guard dogs on your fat asses again." Mr. Crum briskly walks into the room, exclaiming, "That's enough. Everyone, quiet down. I'm running this meeting." As expected, three voices coming from the window seats reply, "Waiting." Mr. Zunday replies to the tribe's comments, telling Mr. Crum, "So am I. What is this all about?" Mr. Crum tells Mr. Zunday, "I'm running this meeting, not you." Mr. Zunday replies, "Don't let me stop you. Go ahead. Get started." Quietly taking note of Braden's statement regarding dogs, Mr. Crum smiles, knowing he now has more evidence stacked upon the sham evidence he already has. Mr. Crum tells Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser, "This has nothing to do with athletics. So, just why are you two here?" Mr. Zunday replies, "For the same reason we're always here. There are six athletes seated in this classroom. Track tryouts begin tomorrow, so we're making sure you don't suspend any of them, not to mention the free entertainment." Mr. Crum smugly informs Mr. Zunday, "Fine. But, remember, I'm running this meeting." Mr. Zunday replies, "Don't let me stop you. Go for it." Johnson asks Mr. Crum, "Why are we here and not in your office?" Before Mr. Crumb can answer, Braden replies, because he ain't got his piece of shit desk that Eddie's father busted up fixed yet. Offering his opinion, Mitchell replies, he's just afraid a fight will break out in his office, and there's no emergency exit. Johnson tells Mitchell, it's six of us against two half-asses. So that would make it six against one. We won. Shuffling a few papers, Mr. Crumb tries to ignore the tribe's commentary, but it is clear that he is getting hot under the collar. Opening the meeting, Mr. Crumb narrates, a very serious incident occurred at the end of last semester after school. Interrupting Mr. Crumb, Mark asks, why am I here? Mr. Crumb yells back at Mark, please don't interrupt me again. Mr. Crumb then continues, as I was saying, at the end of last semester a very serious incident occurred after school. It is my understanding that Axel Braden dragged Charles Black and Andrew Goldstein across the street and started a fight. I called this meeting to get to the bottom of it. I want to know exactly what happened. Braden interrupts, insisting they are full of shit. They dragged my ass across the street and said they were gonna kick my ass. Addressing Braden, Mr. Crumb sarcastically tells him, since you want to talk, why don't you go ahead and tell me what happened? Braden replies, I just told you what happened. They dragged my ass across the street and said they were gonna kick my ass. So I let them take me across the street. Then I was gonna kick their fat asses, but a dog pack stepped in and kicked their asses for me. Repeating what Braden said, Mr. Crumb eloquently says, a dog pack stepped in and kicked their asses for you. Mark tells Mr. Crumb, you shouldn't be using profanity in school. Mr. Crumb exclaims, that's enough. I'm running this meeting, not you. And I'm asking the questions here. I'll get to you in a moment. Mr. Crumb again addresses Braden, telling him, explain to me why you decided to get involved in a fight. Braden explains, they wanted to kick my ass, so I wanted to see what they got. And they ain't got much. Mr. Crumb asks Braden, would you care to explain to me how your three dogs managed to show up at school and join the fight? Braden replies, they ain't my dogs. I don't know why those dogs showed up. Maybe it was dinner time. Mr. Crumb asks Braden, so, those three dogs are not your dogs? Braden replies, that's what I said. They ain't my dogs. Mr. Crumb, trying not to show his anger, asks Braden, do you really expect me to believe that those dogs were not yours? Mark interrupts, telling Mr. Crumb, Braden doesn't have any dogs. Mr. Crumb asks Mark, and just how would you know? Mark replies, because I've been over at his house 100 times. He doesn't have any dogs. Mr. Zunday suggests to Mr. Crumb, I think we've established the fact that Axel Braden does not have a dog. If you still have your doubts, you can call Braden's parents. I'm sure they can clear up the issue for you. So, let's move on. Not wanting an argument with Mr. Zunday at the moment, Mr. Crumb turns to the rest of the tribe and asks, and how were the rest of you involved? Eddie replies, we weren't. We just came by to watch, like everyone else in the school. Mr. Crumb stupidly asks, do you expect me to believe that? Sounding a bit like Kathy, Eddie replies, no. You only believe what you want to believe. So, no. I don't expect you to believe that, or anything else I say. Mr. Crumb boldly informs Eddie, if I hear any further remarks like that out of you, I'll suspend you immediately. Eddie replies, that's your whole goal here anyway. We all know that. In about 15 minutes you're going to say, I've decided to suspend everyone in this room. Then, Mr. Zunday is going to tell you that you're not, because the ass kicking was off school grounds. As Mr. Crumb continues to interrogate Eddie and the rest of the tribe, Mr. Zunday whispers to Mr. Fraser, Eddie even has Crumb figured out. Mr. Fraser whispers back, I see that. He's obviously trying to prevent these guys from trying out for the team. Mr. Zunday whispers to Mr. Fraser, that's certainly a new angle. I wonder if Crum thinks that, if the guys can't attend tryouts, they can't be on the team. Mr. Fraser whispers back, I'm not aware of any rule that prohibits me from putting them on the roster. Mr. Zunde whispers to Mr. Fraser, that's because there is no such rule. And, Crum is going nowhere with this, and he knows it. I'd put an end to this right now, but he hasn't mentioned detention or suspension yet. Getting nowhere with the tribe after 10 more minutes of interrogation, Mr. Crum focuses his attention to Chucky and Goldstein, asking, Charles, please tell me what happened. Chucky replies, last month, Braden was telling everyone all day that he was going to take us across the street and beat us up. We were scared all day long. And that's what he did. Goldstein adds, yeah, yeah. I heard it. I was there. That big guy over there was telling everyone that he was going to kick our ass after school. Yeah. I heard it. Mr. Zunde interrupts and asks Goldstein, may I ask that, if you heard that you were going to be involved in a fight, why you didn't bring it to the administration's attention beforehand? Mr. Crum dare not question Mr. Zunde's motive for asking such a question, for it is the next logical question in the sequence. Goldstein replies, I really didn't think he was going to do it. Yeah, yeah. That's it. Me and Charles didn't really believe him. Yeah. Braden laughs, exclaiming, that ain't what happened. Ask anybody in the school. Mr. Crum paces the floor, not knowing how to proceed. Drawing no definitive conclusions, Mr. Crum announces, I don't know what happened out there, but I do know this. Axel Braden was involved in a fight with Charles Black and Andrew Goldstein at the end of last semester. I also suspect that the others in this room were somehow involved. So, I am going to suspend Axel Braden for a period of 1 week. Charles Black, Andrew Goldstein, and everyone else in this room will get 1 week of detention, starting tomorrow. Braden asks Mr. Crum, why do I get suspension and those two assholes get detention? Mr. Crum replies, because, Axel, it is clear that you instigated the fight. Braden replies, that's a bunch of bullshit. Ask anybody in the school. And I'm gonna tell your fat ass this. If you suspend my ass, next time, I'm gonna drag their flimsy asses so far off school grounds ain't no one gonna hear them scream for help. You might not never find them again. It is clear to everyone in the room that Braden is now beyond upset and very angry. Mr. Zunde steps in, informing Mr. Crum, Crum, you are not suspending anyone unless it's Charles Black or Andrew Goldstein. If you had done your homework, you would have found out, just as Mr. Fraser and I found out, that Charles Black and Andrew Goldstein were boasting the entire day of the upcoming fight and how they were going to kick Braden's ass. In case you hadn't noticed, half the students in the school showed up to watch the fight, including a few teachers. Many of the students even missed their buses to see the entertainment. I'm surprised the news never made it to your office. And, not to mention, the incident occurred off school grounds, so it was completely out of your jurisdiction. Mr. Crum replies, nevertheless, Mr. Zunde, the incident began on school grounds. Mr. Zunde replies, while I understand that, Mr. Crum, I witnessed the entire incident. What I saw was that Andrew Goldstein and Charles Black initiated the fight. Mr. Crum asks, then, why didn't you stop it? Mr. Zunde replies, it was out of my jurisdiction, just like it is out of yours. If the fight were on school grounds during school hours, I might have taken action. Pacing the floor, Mr. Crum exclaims, nevertheless, Mr. Zunde, there was a fight, and something has to be done about it. Mr. Zunde replies, I completely agree. There were over 100 witnesses to the altercation. Perhaps you should call the police department and have them begin an investigation. I'm sure they can call all the students and teachers who witnessed the incident to the auditorium and get their statements. Mr. Crum replies, I don't think we have to go to that extreme. Mr. Zunday boldly informs Mr. Crumb, then, you're done here. You have no case, and you know it. So, send everyone back to class. Realizing that he truly has no case, Mr. Crumb decrees, I am not done with my investigation. I am still going to get to the bottom of this. This was just a preliminary meeting to discover what exactly happened. For now, everyone can go back to class. But, I have my eyes on every single one of you. Mark asks, if this was a preliminary investigation, then why were you going to send me to detention? Mr. Crumb replies, I've had enough out of you, already. Mark asks, does that mean I can leave now? Mr. Crumb brashly replies, yes. Get out of here. Get back to class. Johnson asks Mr. Crumb, where are our late passes? Mr. Crumb angrily replies, stop by the office and pick them up. The tribe gets up and walks out, heading back to class. On the way back to the gym, Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Fraser, I don't know exactly what he thought he was doing back there, but he's obviously after everyone this year. Mr. Fraser replies, I see that. This is going to be a really rough season. Mr. Zunday responds, this is the third time those two clowns have been after our guys. Something's up. Mr. Fraser replies, hopefully, this is the end of it for a while. Neither Mr. Fraser nor Mr. Zunday believes this is the end of the trouble for this year, but they are nevertheless hopeful. As the second school day of the winter semester comes to an end, tryouts for the winter sports begin. Those trying out for a team head to the locker rooms. The upperclassmen know the all too familiar drill. The freshmen, on the other hand, have no clue what to expect. As the guys are getting dressed, Mr. Zunday makes his usual announcement, shouting out into the locker room, listen carefully. Basketball tryouts will be in the main gym. Wrestling tryouts are in the auxiliary gym. If you are trying out for indoor track, please meet in the hallway right outside the locker room. If you are trying out for golf, please bring your balls and your shafts back in the spring. Mr. Zunday, for some reason, is not a fan of golf. Eddie and the tribe all congregate together in the hallway. This year, they are joined by Eddie's younger brother, John. Like Eddie, John is a sprinter. Also, like Eddie, John was the fastest guy in middle school. Hiding around the corner is Jimmy O'Brien, Chucky, Goldstein, and Haynes, who will all be trying out for the track team this year. Looking at the seniors, many of the freshmen are already discouraged. Braden, however, lifts everyone's spirits and gets the energy level up by telling everyone, we're going to have a kick-ass season. It looks like we got a lot of good men here today. And some good women too. Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday walk down the hallway together. With them are Kathy, Paula, Barbara, and Wendy. Seeing the vast number of students trying out for the team, Mr. Fraser mentions to the girls, I'm really glad to have you all back this year. I'm going to need a lot of help sorting through all of this. Now that the team assistants are back, Mr. Zunday can immediately begin working with the field athletes. Mr. Fraser announces, this is the meeting place for indoor track. If you are not trying out for track, you are in the wrong place. Mr. Fraser instructs the crowd to follow him as he walks down the hallway to the unmarked door leading to the indoor arena. The upperclassmen know exactly what is behind this door, but to many of the freshmen, it will be a surprise. Mr. Fraser opens the door, and the group heads down the metal stairway. Behind the door is a very wide and open steel staircase, which goes to the basement of the school. Underneath the classrooms is a full-size 220-yard indoor track. On one side of the 220-yard oval track is a long track for the sprinting events. In the center of the oval track is an area for the high jump and shot put events. To either side of the track are bleachers for spectators. And at the corners of the expansive arena are benches that can accommodate up to four competing teams. Mr. Fraser tells the athletes to have a seat on the bleachers. Standing with Mr. Zunde and his team assistants, Mr. Fraser announces, "Welcome to tryouts for indoor track. I am Mr. Fraser, the head coach. Standing next to me is Mr. Zunde, the school's athletic director. Also standing next to me are Barbara, Kathy, and Paula, who are the assistant coaches. And to my far right is Wendy, our equipment manager and team assistant." Mr. Fraser then makes the surprise announcement, "If you are willing to settle for second place, please head to the locker room, get dressed, and go home." That announcement comes as a shock to many of the freshmen. Mr. Fraser continues, "If you are trying out for a field event, Mr. Zunde will be your coach today. Please follow him now." The field athletes follow Mr. Zunde to a corner on the other side of the arena. Bobby B., the shot doc, leads the group, following Mr. Zunde. Also among the field athletes is Chucky, who apparently has been working on his shot put skills over the last year. Mr. Fraser continues, "If you are a distance runner, Barbara, my assistant coach, will be your coach today. Wendy will be working with her. Please follow them to the other side of the arena now." Mr. Fraser waits a moment as the distance runners walk to the other side of the arena. Mitchell, walking with Barbara, is the school's five-star miler and is expected to take the gold medal in the state invitational meet this year. Akinmola, however, also wants that gold medal. In the best scenario, one of them will have to settle for the silver medal. Mr. Fraser continues, "If you are a sprinter, Kathy and Paula will be your coach today." Mr. Fraser then raises his voice and announces, "And if your name is Jimmy O'Brien, head to the locker room. Now, you are cut." The upperclassmen, who have been through tryouts with O'Brien before, all laugh. O'Brien leaves, passing by Braden on his way out. As O'Brien walks by, Braden comments, "It's for your own safety, Junior." O'Brien heads up the staircase, wondering why he was yet again denied a chance to try out for the team this year. Mr. Fraser continues, "Now that we got rid of that problem, Kathy and Paula will arrange a few exercises so that you may demonstrate your skill. Exercises, in this case, will mean running the 40-yard dash and the 440-yard dash time trials." Mr. Fraser tells Kathy and Paula to time Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson in the 40-yard dash in the first heat, and Tessa, Erica, Hoffer, and John, Edda's younger brother, in the second heat. Mr. Fraser is curious to see how fast his core sprinters are this year. Mr. Fraser explains to Kathy and Paula that, after the 40-yard dash heats are completed, the mile should also be finished. To trim the field down faster, Mr. Fraser instructs his team assistants to organize the 440-yard dash after the 40-yard dash, immediately cutting anyone who cannot run faster than 70 seconds. Although 70 seconds is not at all a competitive time, Mr. Fraser might discover the slower sprinters may have some other skill, such as being better at distance races. Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson get on the track and set their blocks. The other sprinting candidates sit on the bleachers and will be watching what is expected of them. With the experienced runners not needing any instruction, Mr. Fraser announces, "On your marks." He then announces, "Set." Once everyone is in the set position, the buzzer sounds. In the first few steps, the runners go from 0 to 20 miles per hour faster than an automobile. Eddie, who has been focusing on stretching, takes a very early lead. Mark, Braden, and Johnson are tied at 20 yards. At the finish line, Eddie crosses first, Mark second, with Braden and Johnson tied for third place. Mr. Fraser impatiently asks, "What did you clock them at? What do we got on the clock?" All excited, Kathy replies, "Eddie at 4.5 seconds, and Braden at 4.7 seconds. Paula replies, "Mark got 4.6, and I also got 4.7 for Johnson." Mr. Fraser exclaims, "This is what I expect. Those are awesome times." Mr. Fraser already knows these four runners are unbeatable. He just wanted to see where they stood this year. And this is tryouts. The times delivered by any runner during an actual meet are generally faster. Hoffa, Tessa, Erika, and John get on the track next, clearly demonstrating that they all have been behind the blocks before. Mr. Fraser announces, "On your marks." Once they appear ready, he announces, "Set." Once everyone is in the set position, the buzzer sounds. 10 yards into the race, the runners are tied. At 20 yards, no one has yet broken from the pack. At 30 yards, John takes a slight lead. Crossing the finish line first is John, followed by Hoffa, Tessa, and Erika. It appears the rivals Erika and Tessa tied this time. Even more impatient than before, Mr. Fraser asks, "What's on the clock? What do we got? What do we got?" Kathy replies, "John at 5.0 seconds and Erika at 5.2 seconds. Paula replies, "Hoffa at 5.1 seconds and Tessa at 5.2 seconds. Mr. Fraser exclaims, "Can you believe it? Look at these times this year." One freshman in the bleachers was heard commenting, "Well, two of them are girls. We can beat them. They will likely learn otherwise very shortly." But, for now, Mr. Fraser is satisfied with his core sprinters. Once the mile is over, and the rest of the 40-yard dash heats have been completed, it's time to run the 440-yard dash. The 440-yard dash is Braden's race. He is not about to let anyone beat him. Kathy instructs the sprinters to form groups of six, preferably with athletes of their own skill level. Kathy instructs Braden, Eddie, Mark, Johnson, Hoffa, and John to run in the first heat. These six runners were among those with the fastest 40-yard dash times. Since this is Braden's race, and he can easily run a sub-50-second time, he is assigned the inside lane. Unknown to Braden and Mr. Fraser, Eddie can also now run a sub-50-second quarter mile, and so can Mark and Johnson. And so can Mitchell. Braden, all fired up, exclaims, "Now, it's down to business. It's us kicking time. Ain't no one beating me this year. All the gold medals are mine." One freshman comments, asking, "Who is that guy?" Braden, overhearing the comment, repeatedly points to his chest, exclaiming, "I'm the chiefest kicker around here, and I have the medals to prove it." Braden is not bashful before a race. His pre-race rants get his adrenaline up, leading to a better race. Kathy announces to those watching the race, "Braden, in lane one, took the gold medal at state last year in this event. Pay close attention to him. And, by the way, this race will be more competitive than the 440-yard dash was at state last year." The other sprinters, standing with their groups on the inside of the track, will have an excellent view of how this race is run. For the benefit of those who may not know, Kathy announces, "This is a two-lap race. The way the blocks are set, the runners must stay in their lanes for the entire race." Kathy announces, "On your marks." Paula mentions to the spectators, "Pay close attention to the runners when they get in the set position and how they are focused." Kathy announces, "Set." The runners are set and are ready to go. The buzzer sounds and the runners are out of the blocks. The six star athletes all have an awesome start. 5 steps into the race, quite unexpectedly, Braden suddenly falls to the ground and goes down hard. Mr. Fraser blows his whistle, stopping the race. Silence comes over the arena as Mr. Fraser, Kathy, and Paula rush over to aid Braden to find out what's wrong. Braden is very slow to get up, but manages well. Wendy, seeing what happened, runs over from where the distance group is seated to help Braden. Expressing great concern, Mr. Fraser asks Braden, "What happened?" Braden stands up, albeit slowly, exclaiming, "Somebody tripped me. Somebody stuck their foot out and tripped me." Looking around for the perpetrator, Braden is exceedingly angry. Turning to the crowd, Mr. Fraser asks, in a very loud and demanding tone, "Who tripped him?" All fingers point to Andrew Goldstein, but Braden already knew that. Mr. Fraser approaches Goldstein and yells, "Did you trip him?" Goldstein arrogantly replies, "Yeah, yeah. I didn't like mean it or anything. It was an accident." "Yeah, yeah, that's what it was. An accident." Mr. Fraser, yelling at the top of his voice, exclaims, "What did you do that for?" Goldstein, acting cool and nonchalant, replies, "Paybacks." "Yeah, yeah, paybacks." A lot of chatter among the athletes can be heard about what just happened. And, as usual, Goldstein makes no sense at all. As Mr. Fraser is verbally having it out with Goldstein, Braden has reasonably recovered from his fall. Everyone in the arena suddenly gets very quiet as Braden approaches Goldstein. Braden knows exactly who tripped him. He was there, and he saw Goldstein's foot intentionally step out. Braden grabs Goldstein by the arm, places his right arm in an arm lock, and drags him away from Mr. Fraser. Braden tells Goldstein, "You shouldn't have done that." Silence now comes over the arena to the extent that you can hear a pin drop. Mark whispers to Eddie, "Let's get a good seat. This is going to be good." They quickly move closer to watch what is about to come down. Braden forces Goldstein's arm, which is still in an arm lock, over Goldstein's head, twisting it into a position it was never meant to move in. A loud pop comes from Goldstein's shoulder as he screams out in pain, which echoes throughout the arena. Braden turns Goldstein around, and the two adversaries are now face to face. With a right uppercut, Braden solidly connects with Goldstein's left jaw, which makes a very loud cracking sound, followed rapidly by a left cross punch to the right side of Goldstein's face. Goldstein falls to the ground and lays motionless. With an elapsed time of approximately 15 seconds, Goldstein is knocked out and taken out of commission. Braden walks away and sits on the bleachers. As if that incident wasn't enough, watching the event from the steel staircase is Mr. Brian and his son, Jimmy. Mr. Brian asks Jimmy, "So, is this what always goes on during track practice?" Jimmy responds, "Yeah. And that's Axel Braden. He's the same guy who ran me over on the track last year." Mr. Brian tells Jimmy, "He looks like a real bully. We should go and get Mr. Crumb." Mr. Brian and Jimmy walk back up the staircase and head straight to the principal's office. Barbara, who is trained in CPR and the unofficial team paramedic, walks over to Goldstein. She finds Goldstein is breathing and has a pulse, so she lets him lay there. Barbara walks over and tells Mr. Fraser, "Well, the good news is he's still alive. But he smells like he's been smoking pot. It's pretty strong." Mr. Fraser asks, "Are you sure?" Barbara replies, "Yeah. I'm 100% sure." Mr. Fraser throws his arms in the air and exclaims, "Here we go again. What else can go wrong?" Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunde walk over to Goldstein, who is still motionless. Mr. Zunde, who saw the takedown, mentions to Mr. Fraser, "It looks like he broke his jaw and dislocated his shoulder when he fell. The jaw is usually in the center of the face, not off to the side like that. And the arm doesn't usually move into that position as far as I know. I suspect he's out for the rest of the season." Mr. Zunde has little intolerance for stupidity and quite an unusual sense of humor, explaining his verbal assessment of the situation. Mr. Fraser tells Paula to call for an ambulance and the police, the latter because drugs are suspected to be involved. Mr. Zunde, who saw the fight, but not the events leading up to it, asks, "What exactly happened?" Mr. Fraser, who is quite angry, explains, "Whoever that guy is laying on the floor tripped Braden a few steps into the race. Braden went down hard." Mr. Zunde asks, "He tripped him? Intentionally?" Mr. Fraser replies, "Yeah. It looks like it was intentional. The guy even admitted it." From the bleachers, Braden stands up and exclaims, "Yeah, it was intentional. I saw that asshole stick his foot out. And so I kicked his ass. I should just go over there now and break his legs so he won't do that to nobody else. Mr. Zunday asks Braden, you saw it? Braden exclaims, yeah. I saw it. And I had no time to react. With several runners seeing Goldstein intentionally trip Braden, Goldstein admitting that he tripped Braden, Goldstein admitting that it was a payback, and Braden seeing Goldstein's footstep out to intentionally trip him, Goldstein has little defense. Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Fraser, I don't quite recognize him. Who is he? Mr. Fraser replies, I recognize him from gym class, but don't recall his name. If I remember correctly, he's one of the guys that tried to kick the shit out of Braden at the end of last semester. Mr. Fraser then yells out, does anyone know who that guy is? Chucky, who is trying out for the shot put today, replies, yeah. That's Andy Goldstein. Mr. Zunday, who remembers Chucky from last year from the incident with Erica, asks, is he your friend? Chucky replies, yeah. Mr. Zunday tells Chucky, you're cut. Head to the locker room now. Get out of here. Now? Chucky asks, why? Mr. Zunday replies, if he's your friend, you're probably next. Get out of here. Now? Chucky heads to the locker room, passing by Goldstein. Great fear comes over Chucky as he sees Goldstein laying motionless on the floor. It's hard not to notice that Goldstein's right arm and jaw are no longer in their normal anatomical positions. Chucky watched as Goldstein was on the business end of Braden's 15-second ass kicking. All of a sudden, Chucky realizes how fortunate he was to be belted to the fence by Eddie. Chucky reasons to himself that, if Braden can do this to Goldstein in only 15 seconds, what could Eddie do? After all, Eddie is stronger than Braden, and Chucky is quite weak in comparison to Goldstein. The paramedics arrive and are directed to Goldstein. While Goldstein is attended to, two police officers walk down the staircase. Mr. Zunday greets the police, explains to them what happened, and then tells them, we suspect that drugs are involved. You may want to check it out. The senior officer, Officer Richard Hayes, asks, what makes you think drugs are involved? Mr. Zunday tells the officer, follow me. Mr. Zunday and Officer Hayes walk over to Goldstein. The officer can smell the essence of marijuana on Goldstein. The officer tells Mr. Zunday, I see what you mean. I can't argue with that. Mr. Zunday tells the officer, his name is Goldstein or something. The officer mentions, yeah, Andrew Goldstein. We've known about this character for years. So, this is where the judge sent him. And seeing what we have here, we'll be back in the morning with a warrant to search his locker. Mr. Zunday then directs the officer to Mr. Fraser. Officer Hayes asks Mr. Fraser, so, what happened to him? Mr. Fraser answers, he tripped one of my runners during a race. When the runner got up, he kicked the shit out of him. The officer asks, so, let me get this straight. Goldstein intentionally tripped the runner during a race. Mr. Fraser replies, that's what I hear. The officer asks, did anyone see it? Mr. Fraser replies, yes. Everyone in the area pointed to him. They all saw the same thing. The officer gets everyone together and takes the names of the witnesses for his report. Braden, still sitting alone on the bleachers, is watching what is going on. Officer Hayes, accompanied by Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser, approaches Braden. Braden thinks to himself that he is now in big trouble. Officer Hayes asks Braden, are you Axel Braden? Braden replies, yeah. The officer tells Braden, tell me what happened. Braden answers, I was running the 440. That guy stuck his foot out and tripped me, and I fell. I barely made it 10 yards before he tripped me. The officer asks, and then what happened? Knowing where this is going, Braden replies, then, I kicked his ass. Hearing all the evidence, the officer asks Braden, "Do you want me to make an arrest?" Misunderstanding the officer's question, Braden exclaims, "I don't want to get arrested." Clarifying his question, the officer asks, "No, no, no. Do you want me to arrest this Goldstein character?" Officer Hayes sees that everyone is confused, so he has Braden, and the key witnesses, sit on the bleachers. The officer explains to the group, if this Goldstein character intentionally tripped a runner on the track, that would be considered assault. Assault is defined as any unwanted touch, especially when it is intended to cause physical harm or injury to another person. The key word here is intentional. If what happened on the track were an accident, that would be a different story. As another example, if a football player gets tackled and suffers a severe injury, that cannot be considered assault since it is an inherent risk of the game. Let me be very clear about this. Intent to cause physical injury is the key phrase. Intentionally tripping someone running on the track falls into that category. Turning to Braden, Officer Hayes explains, "To be clear, this Goldstein character assaulted you when he intentionally tripped you. For that, he can be arrested. If you like, I can make an arrest right now." Braden tells the officer, "I don't know. I'd better talk to my dad about this one." Reassuring Braden, the officer tells him, "You don't have to decide today. In this state, you have 2 years to decide to press charges." Turning his attention again to Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser, Officer Hayes informs them, "And to be clear, if we find anything in his locker, we'll arrest him." The officers seem like they already know what is in Goldstein's locker. Braden is greatly relieved that he is not in trouble. But a different sort of trouble is now walking down the steel staircase. Mr. Crum, Mr. Brian and his son, Jimmy, approach Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser, who are still talking to the police officers. Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Crum, "There are no overdue library books down here. You can leave now." Mr. Crum announces, "I hear Axel Braden started a fight." Setting the record straight, Mr. Fraser replies, "Axel Braden did not start a fight." Mr. Crum tells Mr. Fraser, "That's not what I hear. Mr. O'Brien, here, said that he saw it." Chronically perturbed at Mr. O'Brien, Mr. Fraser replies, "Mr. O'Brien only sees what he wants to see." Officer Hayes interrupts the conversation, asking Mr. Crum, "And who are you?" Bothered by the questioning of his authority, Mr. Crum brashly replies, "I'm Mr. Crum, the principal of this school." The officer explains to Mr. Crum, "We have this under control. This Andrew Goldstein character is reported to have intentionally tripped a runner during a race. In our book, that is called assault. We're taking care of it. But you have another problem. There is a serious drug problem in this school. Andrew Goldstein, who is a known drug dealer, is apparently intoxicated with drugs. We'll be back in the morning with a warrant to search his locker, and I suggest that no one tamper with any potential evidence." Not knowing how to respond, Mr. Crum replies, "Did Axel Braden start a fight?" The officer firmly answers, "It doesn't matter. He was assaulted. Anything that immediately follows an assault is considered justifiable self-defense." Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Crum, "Crum, get out of my arena. If you would have done your job and monitor the school grounds for students smoking dope, this would not have happened." Angered by Mr. Zunday's remark, Mr. Crum exclaims, "You can't talk to me that way." Countering Mr. Crum's claim, Mr. Zunday replies, "I just did, so apparently I am perfectly capable of talking to you that way. Get out of my arena, Crum. This has been taken care of." Mr. Zunday's comments clearly let the officers know who is in charge. The police officers and paramedics leave, taking Goldstein away in a bus. Mr. Fraser tells everyone to get back to tryouts. Mr. Zunday finally gets rid of Mr. Crum, at least for now. Mr. Zunday again rejoins the field athletes, who have been practicing for a while on their own. Mr. O'Brien, however, does not leave that quickly. Mr. Brian is beside himself that Jimmy was not allowed to try out for the track team. Mr. Brian boldly asks Mr. Fraser, why wasn't Jimmy allowed to try out for the team? Mr. Fraser replies, because he's too dangerous on the track. I cut him. It's for his own good. Mr. Brian asks, do you really think that's fair? Losing his patience with Mr. Brian, Mr. Fraser replies, look. Jimmy presents a danger to himself and the other runners. Don't you remember what happened last year? Jimmy stepped onto the track and caused a collision. I can't have that, or you interfering with my team, like you did last year. He's cut. So, both of you, go home. Not taking no for an answer, Mr. Brian raises his voice, telling Mr. Fraser, I demand that Jimmy is given the opportunity to try out for the team. Mr. Fraser replies, and just who appointed your scrawny little s coach? Mr. Brian replies, now, that was uncalled for. Mr. Fraser, knowing that Jimmy does not have what it takes to make the team, tells Mr. Brian, okay. Have it your way then. Having enough of Mr. Brian, Mr. Fraser blows his whistle and yells out, who wants to kick Jimmy O'Brien's ass? Mr. Brian tells the coach, now, that wasn't very nice, now was it? Mr. Fraser replies, so what? Deal with it. Braden, still full of adrenaline from his encounter with Goldstein, exclaims, I'll kick his puny little ass. I'm on a good ass kicking streak today. Get his flimsy little ass on the track. Mark also volunteers, which brings Eddie and Johnson in on the ass kicking. Erica also steps up, filling the field. Mr. Fraser asks Jimmy O'Brien, pick your poison. What race do you want to run? Jimmy talks it over with his father, and they decide that Jimmy will run the 40-yard dash. Jimmy figures that, since the 40-yard dash is shorter, his deficiencies may not be quite as evident. It is well known that Braden will kick O'Brien's ass big time in the 440-yard dash, so they choose to avoid that contest. And Jimmy doesn't stand a chance in the mile. Practice will be over before he could complete a one-mile run. The runners adjust and get behind their blocks, except for O'Brien, who uses the blocks where the previous runner had them set. Mr. Fraser is quick to announce, on your marks. Braden tells O'Brien, I hope you're ready for your ass kicking, Junior. After a 10-second delay waiting for O'Brien, Mr. Fraser announces, set. The runners get set, and Mr. Fraser sounds the buzzer. O'Brien is out of the blocks last, with the other runners already 3 steps ahead. Halfway through the race, Eddie takes the lead, but this is his race. Mark is in 2nd place, tied with Braden and Johnson. Erica is slightly behind Mark and Johnson. Not surprisingly, O'Brien is in 3rd place. At the finish line, Eddie crosses 1st, Mark 2nd, with Braden and Johnson tied for 3rd place. Erica is right behind Braden and Johnson, delivering an awesome time. As expected, finishing in 3rd place is O'Brien. Wasting no time, Mr. Fraser asks Kathy, what did you clock O'Brien at? What do we got? Kathy, who timed O'Brien, replies, I got him at 10.4 seconds. Mr. Fraser turns to Mr. Brian and exclaims, and that is exactly why Jimmy is not on the team. Mr. Brian stupidly asks, is Jimmy's time really that bad? Mr. Fraser replies, no. Not if you're running a 100-yard dash. This was a 40-yard dash. His time should be in the 5s, not 10.4 seconds. Anyone else in that race can run 100 yards in the time it took Jimmy to run 40 yards. Quite angry with Mr. Fraser's handling of the situation, Mr. O'Brien bluntly tells Mr. Fraser, I really don't think that was a very fair race. You set Jimmy up. You put him up against your fastest runners. Mr. Fraser, who has had enough of O'Brien, replies, oh, really? Would you like to hand-pick the runners that Jimmy will compete against? Mr. O'Brien replies, that would certainly make it a lot more fair. Lecturing Mr. O'Brien, Mr. Fraser replies, "No, it won't, you moron. Jimmy will not have the option of choosing who he will run against in a meet. No one gets that choice. No matter how you look at it, 10.4 seconds in a 40-yard dash is not a competitive time. He's cut. Both of you, head to the locker room. Now." Mr. O'Brien and Jimmy head to the stairs. Mr. Fraser tells Kathy and Paula to get the 440-yard dash time trials underway. A lot of time was lost during this tryout session because of Goldstein and O'Brien. This causes Mr. Fraser to announce, "We have a lot of work to do and not much time to get it done. Let's get moving. We don't have all day. And the next person to trip someone, I'm sorry, but you'll be on your own." Kathy and Paula start the time trials where they left off, with Braden and the rest of the tribe rerunning their heat. After the tryout session, Mr. Fraser has everyone sit on the bleachers. He explains that the first cut will take place before tomorrow's tryout session. He also explains that the list of successful candidates thus far will be posted on the window of the administration office tomorrow morning. The bad news is another cut will take place after tomorrow's practice. Everyone heads up the staircase and to the locker room, hoping that they are invited to return tomorrow. After today's practice, however, the athletes have a good idea whether they will be invited to return. The athletes head to the locker room, except for Braden, who is called aside by Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday. Mr. Fraser asks Braden, "What was the issue with that guy?" He mentioned something about paybacks. Braden explains, "Yeah. Goldshit and Chucky have been after us for a while, ever since school started. It all started when they said Eddie beat up Chucky when we were all sitting on the lawn at lunch, back when school started. And then, that Goldshit guy started all that shit in physics class during a test, kicking the chairs and pushing people out of their seats." Mr. Zunday interjects, "Now, I remember him and all that crap from last semester. I told those two clowns that they should carefully calculate what they are up against, and if they are foolish enough to start something with any of these guys, they are not likely to make it out the other end in one piece. It appears Goldstein didn't take my advice." Braden continues, "And they've been after me, Eddie, and Mark ever since. We've been just ignoring them." Mr. Fraser asks, "How about Johnson, Mitchell, and Bobby B?" Braden replies, "They ain't been after them yet. But I'm sure their turn is coming." Mr. Zunday mentions, "From what I saw of Goldstein laying on the floor today, they probably won't get their turn anytime soon." Mr. Zunday tells Braden, "Well, it's no secret that you'll be called to Mr. Crumb's office tomorrow. He's going to try to suspend you. He might even call your father down to the school. But don't worry about it. You heard what the officer said." Braden comments, "I still can't believe that guy did that." Mr. Zunday points out, "Well, if drugs were involved, it doesn't surprise me." Mr. Fraser assures Braden, "We'll listen for the announcement tomorrow morning. We'll be right behind you." Braden heads to the locker room as Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser walk back to the physical education office. The next morning, one by one, the tribe takes their usual seat by the window in physics class. Conspicuously missing today is Andrew Goldstein, whose absence motivated Chucky to sit on the other side of the classroom today with Haynes. It doesn't take long for the class and the school to learn what happened to Goldstein yesterday. Chucky wasted no time telling everyone that Braden kicked the shit out of Goldstein for no reason at all. Fortunately, no one is dumb enough to believe Chucky's stories anyway. Braden walks into the classroom and, much to everyone's surprise, the class claps and cheers. Goldstein has apparently made many more enemies than friends in the last few months. As Braden takes his seat, the teacher, Miss Amherst, walks in. After taking attendance, Miss Amherst begins her lecture for today. She begins stating, "Last week, we learned that If an object in motion collides with another object, as in an elastic collision, there will be a transfer of momentum. The transfer of momentum is in accordance with the formula we learned, which is mass times velocity is equal to mass times velocity. In an inelastic collision, however, there is an incomplete transfer of momentum. Miss Amherst asks the class, does anyone know what happens to the loss in velocity in an inelastic collision that is not transferred from one object to the other? The class falls silent. Realizing that her question is probably beyond the scope of the class material, Miss Amherst explains, let me give an example of an inelastic collision. A fist, moving rapidly through the air, encountering a jaw, is an example of an inelastic collision. Where would the energy not transferred from the fist's velocity to the jaw's resultant velocity go? Mitchell, the honor student, replies, something's going to be deformed. Miss Amherst replies, very good. The excess energy will either cause deformation of one or both of the objects or, in some cases, the excess energy can be stored and liberated in the future. Miss Amherst explains, so, if a fist has an inelastic collision with a jaw, as in boxing, the energy that does not get transferred as momentum will likely cause physical damage to the jaw. Braden whispers to Mark, I think she's talking about me. Mark whispers back, how did she know about what happened yesterday? Braden replies, I don't know. Teachers are usually gone after school is out. Miss Amherst continues, but don't worry, none of this will be on the test. Since we had an example of an inelastic collision occur yesterday after school, this is the perfect time to discuss the physics behind it. In real life, inelastic collisions are often used to solve problems that can't be solved in any other way. Mark then whispers to Braden, yo bro, she just gave you a high five. Braden whispers back, yeah. I see that. Braden is not used to being complimented in this manner. Mid-morning brings the expected announcement over the loudspeaker. Axel Braden, please report to the administration office immediately. This time, Braden knows exactly why he is being summoned. Mark tells Braden, yo, bro. They are busting you for overdue library books. Braden replies, the only thing that was overdue was yesterday's ass kicking. Braden heads to the principal's office, knowing what is coming. Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser, hearing the announcement, also head to the principal's office. When Braden arrives, the secretary, Mrs. Marlowe, tells him to take a seat. Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday walk in shortly after, and see Braden waiting to see Mr. Crum. Already knowing the answer, Mr. Zunday asks Mrs. Marlowe, the secretary, do you know what the issue is today with Axel Braden? She replies, it's about the fight yesterday. Mr. Crum asked me to call him to his office. Mr. Zunday calmly replies, oh, that. I see. That's already been taken care of. Mr. Zunday mentions to Braden, I wonder what flavor of bellicose pontification Mr. Crum has in store for us today. Mrs. Marlowe, overhearing Mr. Zunday, whispers to him, Mr. Goldstein is in there right now. He's not too happy. Mr. Zunday informs Mrs. Marlowe, I can perfectly understand that. He has a very good reason to be upset. His son was smoking pot in school yesterday. Mr. Zunday then asks Braden, do you have any overdue library books? Braden replies, no. Mr. Zunday comments, well, this meeting must be about using the restroom without permission or something equally as serious. Inside Mr. Crum's office, Mr. Crum assures Mr. Goldstein that he will be talking with Axel Braden next and will investigate and get to the bottom of the situation. Getting to the bottom of the situation is one of Mr. Crum's favorite phrases. When Mr. Crum uses that particular phrase, Mr. Zunday has discovered that Mr. Crum really has no idea how to move forward. After 10 minutes of waiting, Mr. Crum's door opens, and Mr. Goldstein walks out. Seeing Braden, Mr. Goldstein yells out, hey, are you the one that beat up Andy? Braden replies, I wouldn't have kicked his ass if he didn't trip me. Mr. Goldstein grabs Braden's right arm and attempts to punch Braden in the face with a right. Before Mr. Zunday or Mr. Fraser could react, Braden stands up, blocks the punch, and forcefully shoves Mr. Goldstein back into Mr. Crumb's office, propelling him clear across the principal's office. Falling over a chair and onto the floor, Mr. Goldstein is very slow to get up as he yells out a few choice obscenities. Truth be told, Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser did very little to avert the altercation between Braden and Mr. Goldstein. Rushing out of his office, Mr. Crumb exclaims, "What is going on here?" Mr. Zunday informs Mr. Crumb, "It appears that Mr. Goldstein tried to start a fight with Braden. Perhaps you should suspend Mr. Goldstein. Or maybe you can send him to detention since this is his first offense." Mr. Crumb exclaims, "Enough with the funny stuff. What is going on here?" Braden tells Mr. Crumb, "He grabbed my arm and threw a punch. I blocked the punch and threw his fat ass back into your office." Embellishing a bit, Braden adds, "First gold shit, and now his father. I just don't feel safe in this school anymore." Mrs. Marlowe assures Mr. Crumb, "It happened just like they said, sir. Mr. Goldstein tried to start a fight with Axel." Wanting to sort out the details, Mr. Crumb tells everyone to get into his office. Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser walk in, followed by Braden. Braden comments, "I see you ain't got a new desk yet. It looks like this one still needs some work. It looks like to me that your bookshelf needs some work too. I wonder what happened to it." Braden knows exactly what happened to Mr. Crumb's bookcase, for he was present and watched firsthand as Eddie hammered his fist down and damaged it. Mr. Crumb ignores Braden's comments, but Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser both crack a smile. Mr. Zunday moves one of the guest chairs to the other side of the room and tells Braden to have a seat. Mr. Goldstein is seated on the other side of the room, slowly recovering from being thrown across the room by Braden. Mr. Zunday, learning from Erika's father, knows that keeping Braden and Mr. Goldstein separated is probably a good idea. Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser stand in their usual place near the bookcase, which now has a missing shelf, courtesy of Eddie. Mr. Crumb opens the meeting, informing everyone, "A very serious incident occurred at this school yesterday. For everyone's information, Andrew Goldstein is now in the hospital and is in critical condition. I am informed that he has a broken jaw, a fractured skull, and a badly dislocated shoulder. I further understand that two surgeries will be required to repair the damage." Quite upset, Mr. Goldstein interjects, asking, "And this is the guy who did it?" Mr. Crumb replies, "Yes, he is." Braden mentions, "If he didn't trip me, I wouldn't have kicked his ass." Mr. Crumb asks Braden, "So, you're admitting that you kicked his ass?" Braden replies, "Just like the officer said yesterday, he assaulted me. So, I kicked his ass. And I'll kick his ass again if he pulls any more shit like that." Turning toward Mr. Goldstein, Braden adds, "And if you touch me again, I'll kick your fat ass too." Mr. Crumb tells Braden, "Axel, we've been over this before. Please watch your language." Not putting up with Mr. Crumb today, Braden tells Mr. Crumb and Mr. Goldstein, "How come no one's telling Goldshit to watch his foot?" Mr. Goldstein sternly informs Braden, "For your information, it's Goldstein." A heated exchange occurs between Mr. Crumb, Braden, and Mr. Goldstein. During the verbal ping-pong match, Mr. Zunday is perusing the school's policy manual, which he finds on the usual place on Mr. Crumb's bookcase. Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday calmly listen to the argument as Braden attempts to convince Mr. Crumb that it was Goldstein who started the altercation. Mr. Zunday shares a section of the policy manual he found last year with Mr. Fraser as the heated discussion continues. Mr. Zunday then takes Mr. Crumb's copy of One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish, opens it, and displays it on the bookshelf, letting everyone know of Mr. Crumb's advanced literary interests. Mr. Crumb finally announces the long-awaited words, "Axel, I'm going to suspend you. Brayden replies, I thought you might do that. My father told me to tell you that, if you suspend me, he's going to have Goldshit arrested. Mr. Goldstein interjects, it's Goldstein, not Goldshit. Brayden replies, not around here, it's not. Mr. Crum exclaims, okay, that's it. I've had enough. Axel, you're suspended. Brayden replies, you already said that. So, now my father's going to have Goldshit arrested. Mr. Zunde has also had enough. Mr. Zunde tells Mr. Crum, you are not suspending Axel Brayden. It was self-defense, and I'm sure that Mr. Goldstein does not want Andrew to be arrested again. Not appreciating being challenged, Mr. Crum tells Mr. Zunde, I have made my decision, Mr. Zunde. And, I am suspending Axel Brayden. And, that's final. Mr. Zunde calmly informs Mr. Crum, you can't suspend him. It's not within your jurisdiction to suspend him. Unable to contain his anger, Mr. Crum sarcastically exclaims, and may I ask why not, Mr. Zunde? Mr. Zunde hands the school's policy manual to Brayden, and tells him, Axel, will you please read section 5.6 of Mr. Crum's very own copy of the school's policy manual to everyone in this room? Brayden reads the paragraph aloud to everyone, which reads, 5.6, Physical Altercations on the Sports Field. Should a physical altercation occur on the sports field, either in practice or competition, any necessary disciplinary action will be the sole responsibility of the head coach. Should the head coach not come to a resolution, he or she, at their option, may bring the issue to the school's principal or assistant principal. Mr. Crum exclaims, let me see that. Brayden hands the policy manual to Mr. Crum, forcing Mr. Crum to reach far over his desk to grab it. Brayden even taunts Mr. Crum a bit by quickly pulling the manual away when Mr. Crum tries to grab it. Browsing through a few pages, Mr. Crum looks for anything to refute what he just heard Brayden read. Mr. Zunde whispers to Mr. Fraser, I want to see him weasel his way out of this one. Brayden clearly understands what he just read. Brayden sits back in his seat, with his hands clasped behind his head, relaxing as the principal is about to blow a gasket and a fuse. After a few minutes of silence, Mr. Zunde addresses Mr. Crum, telling him, it appears that any disciplinary action is the responsibility of Mr. Fraser. Perhaps you should ask Mr. Fraser what will be done about this situation. Brayden now knows he is off the hook. Mr. Crum replies, exclaiming, this is a serious incident. Mr. Fraser informs Mr. Crum, I know. That's why I had the police come out. They are taking care of it. Not enjoying being usurped, Mr. Crum exclaims, asking, that's it. Mr. Fraser reminds Mr. Crum, this is a case of assault. The police were called, and they are handling it. For now, that's all I'm going to do. Mr. Zunde proposes to Mr. Fraser, loud enough for everyone to hear, you can always punish Brayden by making him run a few laps around the track after school. Hearing all that transpired, Mr. Goldstein exclaims, my son is sitting in the hospital with a broken jaw, a fractured skull, and a dislocated shoulder. And nothing is going to be done about it. Brayden answers, his ass wouldn't be there if he didn't trip me. He'd be out in the field with Chuck is smoking dope right now. How is that any better? Mr. Crum tells Brayden, don't start getting smart. Brayden replies, well, then why don't you just walk out there at lunch and take a look for yourself? They were so high, they hallucinated Eddie belting Chucky's fat ass to the fence. Having enough of listening to Brayden, Mr. Zunde, and Mr. Fraser, Mr. Goldstein exclaims, I can't believe this situation is being taken so lightly. Brayden calmly tells Mr. Goldstein, this shit ain't being taken lightly. I kicked his ass because he tripped me. I didn't take what Goldshit did lightly. Brayden again ignites Mr. Goldstein, and another heated discussion erupts. Mrs. Marlowe informs Mr. Crum, over the intercom, that the police are here and want to see him immediately. Mr. Crum excuses himself for a moment to find out why the police have been called to the school. Officer Richard Hayes, the senior officer, and his partner took the call yesterday regarding the altercation on the track. Today, they arrive with Detective Garrison, who presents Mr. Crum with a warrant to search Andrew Goldstein's locker. Mr. Crum calls Mr. Shapiro, instructing him to open Andrew Goldstein's locker for the officers. Mr. Shapiro escorts the three police officers to Goldstein's locker, and Mr. Crum returns to his verbal wrestling match. Hearing what transpired with the officer, Mr. Goldstein turns to Mr. Crum and exclaims, "I demand to know why they are searching my son's locker." Mr. Crum replies, "I don't know. They have a warrant to search it, so I have to allow it." Mr. Zunde whispers to Mr. Fraser, "At least he understands that part of the law." Mr. Crum asks Mr. Zunde and Mr. Fraser, "Do either of you know what this is all about?" Mr. Fraser replies, "Sure we do. Goldstein was smoking pot before tryouts. The paramedics smelled it on him. So, the police got a warrant to search his locker." Mr. Goldstein exclaims, "I told you people, my son does not take drugs." Braden replies, "And I suppose you don't think he's as trips anyone either." Another heated argument between Braden, Mr. Crum, and Mr. Goldstein begins, as Mr. Zunde and Mr. Fraser stand with their arms crossed, enjoying the entertainment. It appears that Braden has figured out exactly how to inflame Mr. Goldstein. During the lengthy argument, Mrs. Marlowe interrupts again, telling Mr. Crum, over the intercom, that the officers want to see him again. Mr. Crum steps out of his office and is told by Officer Hayes, the senior officer, "We need to know where Andrew Goldstein is right now. Can you advise us of his whereabouts?" Mr. Crum replies, "I understand that he's in the hospital. Why do you want to see him?" The officer replies, "I'm arresting him." Hearing those words, Mr. Goldstein steps out of Mr. Crum's office into the administration area and asks the officer, "Why are you arresting Andy?" The officer asks, "Who are you?" Mr. Goldstein replies, "I'm his father." "What's the problem here?" The officer informs Mr. Goldstein, "Detective Garrison searched his locker. He found marijuana, a few unlabeled pill bottles filled with bennies, some sugar cubes, and a weapon. We'll let them sort the package out downtown." Mr. Goldstein's countenance suddenly drops. The evidence that his son is dealing drugs again is right in front of his face. The officer asks, "Where is Andrew now?" Mr. Goldstein replies, "He's in the county medical center in critical condition. He's having one surgery in a few hours and another one in a few days." Officer Hayes mentions to Detective Garrison, "He was unconscious when we arrived yesterday. We couldn't question him then. They took him away in a bus." Taking some notes, Officer Hayes informs Mr. Goldstein, "As of now, there is a warrant out for your son's arrest. We'll pick him up when he is discharged from the hospital." The officers depart with the evidence, leaving behind more carnage than Braden left on the track yesterday. With a lot more to worry about, Mr. Goldstein leaves the school. Mr. Crum returns to his office and sits behind his desk. Knowing again that he is in checkmate, Mr. Crum tells Mr. Zunde, Mr. Fraser, and Braden, "I haven't decided exactly what I'm going to do about this. Axel, for now, you can return to class." Mr. Zunde informs Mr. Crum, "Crum, you aren't doing anything about this. It's already been taken care of." Not wanting another argument, Mr. Crum tells everyone, "Okay, okay, everybody just get back to work." Mr. Zunde, Mr. Fraser, and Braden leave, as Mr. Crum fails to appreciate that his office is still intact. Mr. Zunde tells Braden, "Don't worry about this. From what I can tell, Goldstein won't be returning to school anytime soon. He's got much bigger problems now." Mr. Fraser tells Braden, "And as for your punishment, you'll be running the 440-yard dash for the next few months. and you're back on the 4x440 relay team. Braden stands tall and replies, "Yes, sir." Braden heads to lunch, where the whole school will find out what happened with Goldstein. On the way back to the gym, Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Zunday, "I wasn't aware of that rule giving the coach full authority on the field." Mr. Zunday confesses, "I found that last year during the altercation between Charles Black and Erica. I didn't need to bring it up last year. I was saving that as a surprise for Crum." Now elated, Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Zunday, "Well, Mr. Crum now certainly knows his limits. Perhaps he'll stay away from all sports." Not quite as confident, Mr. Zunday replies, "I don't know about that. With Crum, nothing ever makes sense." Agreeing, Mr. Fraser responds, "You do have a valid point." The next day, at tryouts, O'Brien, Chucky, and Goldstein are not present. It's no secret to anyone where Goldstein is. Everyone's just lucky that O'Brien and Chucky didn't return for a second day of embarrassment. For some reason, however, Terry Haynes returned for the second day. It could be that Mr. Fraser, too busy with yesterday's problems, forgot to cut her. Or, perhaps, she met the minimal standard for an invitation to return for the second day of tryouts. Since the weather is nice outside, Barbara has taken a few of the distance runners outside to run along the 3-mile loop along the road behind the school. Among them are Mitchell, Akinmola, Elliot, and a few others who have already earned a spot on the team because of their past performance. Barbara, who is on the university track team, runs with the athletes today, getting a workout in herself. Today, it's down to real business. Having everyone else who is not out running with Barbara sit on the bleachers, Mr. Fraser announces, "Today, we are running the 220-yard dash and the 880-yard run. Everyone will be running in both events. We will start with the 220-yard dash. Form groups of six. Let's get moving." Kathy and Paula organize the heats, lining up the athletes in the order in which they will run. The two assistant coaches, along with Mr. Fraser, will be working two stopwatches apiece. The first 220-yard dash heat is ready to run, which includes Eddie, Mark, Braden, Johnson, Hoffa, and Tessa. Everyone not running is instructed to stand on the sprinting track and watch as the heat is run. Mr. Fraser gives the command, "On your marks." The runners look serious, and it's because, to them, this is serious business. Mr. Fraser announces, "Set." The buzzer is sounded, and the runners are out of the blocks. Halfway through the one-lap race, it appears that Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson are tied. Tessa, in lane one, is up against the fastest guys in the state, and holds her own. As they come out of the final curve, it appears Eddie is in first place, with a one-step lead over Mark. Johnson and Braden are less than one step behind Mark. Hoffa and Tessa are not far behind. A very tight field is good news, since Mark won the gold medal at the state invitational meet in this event last year. Eddie crosses the finish line first, with Mark less than 1 yard behind. Braden and Johnson tie for third place, with Hoffa and Tessa surprisingly finishing together. Tessa has done a lot of work improving her flip turn last year, which has clearly improved her performance on the track. Mr. Fraser compiles the times and asks Paula if she remembers what her third place time in the 220-yard dash at the state invitational meet was last year. Paula remembers her time and tells Mr. Fraser that her third place time was on par with Tessa and Hoffa's performance today. Mr. Fraser blows his whistle, telling everyone, "Listen up." Mr. Fraser announces, "Every single one of these runners could have won a medal at the state meet last year. They are fast. Can you believe it? The bar has been set, and this year it's apparently quite high." Paula looks at Kathy, telling her, "I'm glad we're back here. I'm having fun." Kathy replies, "Yeah. This is what I want to do with my life." Look at Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday. They have more fun than anyone else around this school. Looking at Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser, Paula responds, "Yeah, I can definitely see that." Kathy comments, "They even have fun beating up on that old crumb." A few more 220-yard dash heats are run, with some runners delivering good times, and others delivering not so good times. Once everyone has run the 220-yard dash, the 880-yard run is organized. Mr. Fraser tells everyone that they will run with the same group, and in the same order, as the 220-yard dash. On the way to the starting line, Mark tells Mr. Fraser, "I'm doing good this year. I can run the 100-yard dash in the mid-9-second region, the quarter mile in under 50 seconds, and the half mile in 5 minutes." Mr. Fraser replies, "It sounds like you don't want to run the half mile." Mark replies, "Not really, but I'm going to try to beat Johnson just so I can mess with him later." As the first heat is underway, an unwelcome visitor walks down the metal staircase. Quickly noticed by all, Mr. Crum is probably not looking for students with overdue library books today. Knowing that Mr. Crum is looking for trouble, Mr. Zunday ignores him for a while, waiting to see what dirt he is digging up today. Mr. Crum approaches Kathy and tells her, "I want to see you right now." Kathy tells Mr. Crum, "I'm sorry. It will have to wait. I'm working." Repeating himself, Mr. Crum exclaims, "I said, I want to see you right now." Kathy yells back at the principal, telling him, "If you have your eyes open, then you are seeing me right now. Now, get out of my way." Kathy walks away, recording the 440-yard split times of the two runners to whom she is assigned. Not appreciative of Kathy's combative attitude, Mr. Crum approaches her again, telling her, "Did you hear me? I told you that I want to see you right now." Responding firmly, Kathy tells him, "And I told you that I am busy. Please make an appointment with my secretary. And stay out of my way." Kathy walks away, catching Eddie's and Tessa's 880-yard times. Kathy knows Mr. Crum cannot give her any further problems, so she just brushes him off as a minor annoyance. Getting no response from Kathy, Mr. Crum approaches Mr. Fraser, who is ecstatic with the times just delivered on the track. Mr. Crum asks Mr. Fraser, "What are Kathy Karakova and Paula Giovanni doing here?" Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Crum, "They are my assistant coaches." Mr. Fraser goes about his business, ignoring Mr. Crum for the time being. Now that the heat is over, Kathy, no longer having any fear of Mr. Crum, walks over and asks Mr. Crum, "Now, what's the problem here?" Mr. Crum tells Kathy, "First of all, you're parked in the faculty lot. Second of all, you're not supposed to be here. You graduated." Replying firmly, Kathy tells Mr. Crum, "First of all, Junior, my car has a faculty parking sticker on it. And, for your information, I work here now, and so does Paula and Barbara. Mr. Zunday is my boss. Talk to him. Until then, get out of my way." Mr. Fraser is glad to see Kathy has a backbone, unlike Mr. Crum, the school's resident jellyfish. Not getting anywhere with Kathy or Mr. Fraser, Mr. Crum goes over to talk to Mr. Zunday. Mr. Zunday sees Mr. Crum approaching and yells out to the field athletes, "Okay, which one of you were late to class this week?" Ignoring Mr. Zunday's comment, Mr. Crum exclaims, "Why are Kathy and Paula here?" Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Crum, "They work for me. Is there a problem?" With the ball back in his court, Mr. Crum replies, asking, "What do you mean, they work for you?" Mr. Zunday replies, "Exactly that. They come here and work, which they are doing right now. At the end of the month, they receive a paycheck, just like you and me." In a demanding tone, Mr. Crum asks, "They get paid. Who pays them?" Having enough of Mr. Crum, Mr. Zunday tells him, "The university pays them. They are interns. They make $40 an hour each. And so does Barbara. But don't worry. It's not coming out of your budget. Not believing what he just heard, Mr. Crum exclaims, $40 an hour. Mr. Zunday calmly replies, yes. And it appears that you are interfering with them doing their job. So, we are done here. Get out of my arena, Crum. Mr. Crum tries to continue the conversation, but Mr. Zunday disposes of him for the time being. $40 an hour is a lot more than Mr. Crum can relate to for someone whom he thinks just stands around holding a stopwatch. After hearing what the girls earn, Mr. Crum is even more irate. But Mr. Zunday only informed Mr. Crum of their salaries purely to make him more irate. To the casual observer, it appears as if Mr. Zunday is intentionally trying to get Mr. Crum to blow a gasket. Once Mr. Crum walks away, Bobby B. asks, do they really make $40 an hour? Mr. Zunday replies, yes. That's what they make. It's scholarship money. Colleges and universities technically can't pay you to run, so they find other ways to reward the athletes. Bobby B. gets it. While he can't get paid to throw the shot put or for helping out the teacher with disruptive students, the grade of 100 that he received on the physics exam during Mr. Crum's temper tantrum last semester is evidence of what Mr. Zunday just explained. There is no reward for kicking chairs, disrupting class, and smoking pot during lunch, so Chucky and Goldstein received a grade of 0. The second heat of the 880-yard run is finally organized, which was interrupted by Mr. Crum's temper tantrum. Running in the second heat are the core distance runners, who have returned from their 3-mile run. This group includes Mitchell, Akinmola, Livingston, Amber, and a few others. Giving Mr. Fraser, Kathy, and Paula a break, Barbara starts the race, which everyone knows will be a battle between Mitchell and Akinmola. Both Mitchell and Akinmola will make the team, but there is some sort of synergistic competition between them, setting a pace no one can match. Watching the race is the runners in the next heat. Erica is among them, who everyone expects to be the pacesetter. Normally, Erica would be matched up with Tessa, primarily because they are rivals on the track. But, since neither of them will likely be competing in this event, they were placed in separate heats. Also, for some reason, watching the race from the metal staircase, is Mr. Crum, taking notice that Barbara is also back this year. As the second heat comes to an end, Mitchell, taking first place, edges out Akinmola by a few yards. Akinmola takes second place, Amber takes third place, and Livingston fourth place. Fifth and sixth place go to two runners with non-competitive times, and will not likely make the team. Barbara tells Akinmola that his time was good enough for him to have earned a medal in the state invitational meet last year. This is good news to Akinmola, who always seems to be up against the state's best. Next year, he will be looking forward to holding that title. As the third heat gets ready, Erica walks toward the starting line, exchanging high fives with many of her teammates, one after another. Erica walks by Terry Haynes, also in this heat, who also raises her hand to give Erica a high five. Raising her hand to receive the high five, Erica unexpectedly receives a severe blow to her abdominal area by Haynes. Seeing what just happened, words like shit and uh-oh are whispered around the arena. Anyone who knows Erica also knows what is about to come down. And, quite unfortunate for Haynes, Mr. Fraser saw the incident. Mr. Crum, standing on the staircase, also witnessed exactly what happened firsthand. Erica returns the favor, punching Haynes in her midsection, causing her to double over. Erica delivers a solid right uppercut to Haynes in her jaw, who lands on the ground. Erica proceeds to pulverize Haynes, delivering punch after punch. As the team gathers around to watch, they give Erica and Haynes a lot of room to fight. Erica continues to relentlessly kick the shit out of Haynes. Haynes tries to fight back, but Erica hits Haynes both hard and at will. Screaming from the staircase is Mr. Crumb, yelling, "Stop the fight! Someone, stop the fight!" No student dares to stop the fight. As stupid as it sounds, to do so will likely invite disciplinary action by Mr. Crumb simply by being involved in the altercation. Kathy tells Paula and Barbara, "I'm not stopping the fight. This is above my pay grade." Paula replies, "Yeah, mine too." Mr. Fraser yells out, "Hey, break it up," sounding a bit like he doesn't really mean it. Braden asks Mr. Fraser, "Do you want me to break it up?" Mr. Fraser replies, "No." Here comes Mr. Crumb. We'll let him break it up. Mr. Crumb arrives at the scene as Erica continues beating Haynes to a bloody pulp. Mr. Crumb yells at Mr. Fraser, screaming, "Break up the fight. Do something." Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Crumb, "I've told them to stop once already." Turning his attention back to the fight, Mr. Fraser tells Erica and Haynes, "Hey, break it up, you guys." Erica gets in a few good final blows and decides that Haynes has almost had enough for today. Erica stands up and, with all her strength, kicks Haynes in her ass, prompting Haynes to let out a loud scream. Now that Haynes has been finished off, Erica walks over to Bobby B, who gives her a hug. Bobby B whispers to Erica, "Good job." Mr. Fraser asks Haynes, "Are you okay?" Mr. Crumb exclaims, "She's not okay. Can't you see that?" Haynes, after stumbling a few times, manages to stand up, crying in pain. As she falls back onto the floor, Mr. Crumb asks Haynes, "Do you want me to get an ambulance?" Haynes yells out, "No." After lying on the ground for a few minutes, Haynes stands up again and limps toward the stairway, albeit very slowly. Mr. Fraser tells Barbara, "Take her to the school nurse. Make sure she gets there." Barbara follows Haynes, making sure she gets to her intended destination. Haynes was not around last year when Erica kicked the shit out of Chucky. If she were, she may not have started something with Erica today. Mr. Fraser tells everyone, "Okay, let's get back to practice." Erica gets in her lane and is ready to run. Mr. Crumb, seeing that Mr. Fraser is moving along with tryouts as if nothing unusual happened, exclaims, "Is that all you're going to do about this?" Mr. Fraser replies, "For now, yes. I have to get a team ready by the end of the week. And yesterday, I told everyone that the next person to pull any of this kind of crap will be on their own." Seeing that Mr. Crumb is being a problem, Mr. Zunday walks over to join in on the entertainment. Intending to annoy Mr. Crumb, Mr. Zunday asks, "Is there a problem here?" Mr. Crumb replies, "Of course there's a problem here. There was a fight." Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Crumb, "I'm very aware of that. I saw it. It looks to me like Erica won." Mr. Crumb yells out, "Something needs to be done about it." Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Crumb, "I can clearly see your point. You are right. Something needs to be done about it. Let me discuss this with Mr. Fraser." Mr. Zunday steps aside and has a short private conversation with Mr. Fraser as Mr. Crumb perceives he is now getting the attention he deserves. Mr. Zunday privately tells Mr. Fraser, "The school's policy manual states that the head coach may bring the issue to the school's principal if he so desires. I think you should do that. Just turn the issue over to Mr. Crumb and get rid of him. Then, we can all get back to tryouts." Mr. Fraser replies, "He'll suspend her." Mr. Zunday explains, "No, he won't. The last thing Mr. Crumb would want is another encounter with Erica's father." Grinning ear to ear, Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Zunday, "I see your point." Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday walk back over to Mr. Crumb. In a demanding tone, Mr. Crumb spouts out, "Well." Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Crumb, "We are not doing anything about what happened here today. Haynes started the fight and Erica finished it. However, your policy manual states that the head coach, at their option, may bring the issue to the school's principal." If you want to do anything more about what happened here today, feel free. I'm sure that Erika's father would really like to see you again. Mr. Crum quickly realizes he has been outwitted once again by Mr. Zunde. Mumbling something to himself, Mr. Crum kicks the ground, throws his hands in the air, and walks away. As they leave practice for the day, Erika asks Mr. Fraser, "Am I in trouble?" Mr. Fraser replies, "You're not in any more trouble than you were last year when you took care of Chucky. I'm sure that Mr. Crum might call you to his office tomorrow. If he does, tell him to call your father. I'm sure that your father will put an end to any action Mr. Crum will take." Erika tells Mr. Fraser, "That's going to go over real good." Mr. Zunde comments, "I'm not so sure Mr. Crum wants to tread in that water again." On the way to the athletic office, Mr. Zunde tells Mr. Fraser, "I lost all my shot put guys. All we have is Bobby B. It doesn't look good this year." Mr. Fraser jokingly replies, asking, "What happened to that Chucky character?" Mr. Zunde informs Mr. Fraser, "Oh, yeah. Silly of me. I forgot about him. I cut him. My fault." Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Zunde, "We'll just get Eddie, Mark, or Braden to throw it. I'm sure they can deliver. Look at what they did with the discus last year." With some good news, Mr. Zunde informs Mr. Fraser, "At least I have two top-notch high jumpers. I could use a third in that event." Mr. Fraser suggests, "Johnson is good at the high jump. We can put him in if we need to." Now that tryouts are over, Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunde have a lot of work to do. With the first meet coming up this weekend, they must have all the events assigned and the relay teams formed. A lot of time was lost when Goldstein tripped Braden, but the final roster is complete with a lot of familiar names. The first meet of the year is the annual rematch of Northside, Riverdale, Centerville, and Madison. These four teams seem to meet every year, and the result is always the same. But, this year, Mr. Fraser wants a change. He not only wants all the gold medals, but wants all the medals, gold, silver, and bronze, this year. The next day, Mr. Zunde and Mr. Fraser fully expect to hear Erika call to Mr. Crum's office over the loudspeaker. As the day goes on, the call never comes. Mr. Crum is between a rock and a hard place. If he takes action against Erika, he will have to deal with Erika's father, who is a police captain. If Erika's father is called to the school, he will undoubtedly file assault charges against Terry Haynes. With no good choices, Mr. Crum goes about his business, tracking down overdue library books and students using the restroom without permission. Who knows? With any luck, Mr. Crum might even find a student wandering the halls, late for class.